but by going back to something I was trying to say at the end of Vishvapani's talk on Friday about witnessing each other. Over the last 6 months in particular, Parami and I and others have been working in the Adhisthana Kula, as you know. And, you know, quite regularly that work has involved listening to frustration, maybe some anger sometimes, some doubt, confusion. And in doing that, my most common experience has been just simply being aware of my own limitations and inadequacies. I'm not saying that just to use some self-deprecatory language. I really mean it. You know, like it's just like you're aware of your own limitations of dealing with some quite big and sensitive issues. But you want to do it and you want to engage. Within all of that, I do glimpse sometimes what it can really mean, like what the strength of the order can really be. And it is in this area of witnessing each other. I've had some conversations where I really know that all I need to do is to stay with this person, just to stay with them. I think the language of descent works quite well for me here, that you just stay with them as you kind of go down. You can almost watch them trying to sort of unhook from what they're trying to describe or something, or the pain of it. And I'm trying to be there with them, just like not bringing my own reactivity or defensiveness or my own fear or my own desire to solve, just trying to stay with it. And sometimes, not every time, but sometimes you can actually reach a place where you're witnessing quite a kind of a pure sort of stripped back experience. You might even call it just like bare dukkha in a way, something like that. It does feel like it has an existential flavor to it, at least some of the time. The only thing that I have to keep remembering is not to solve it. You know, it's not my job to solve it. But in doing that and in that realization, Vishvapani used the word humility. And I can see that there is something in there. There's a humility of you're trying to witness somebody. You can't actually solve it for them. You recognize your own limitations and you're still trying to offer something. So that's what one of the things, at least, I was trying to say at the end of his talk on Friday. And I can see many people who can do that in the order better than I can. And also I can see that we can do it collectively. I think that's been one of the purposes, if you like, and one of the outcomes of the Stories of the Past and Present page that was created some months ago. Now, not everyone has this kind of process that goes on in this kind of way, but we all have a version of it, I think, because it is, in the end, it's spiritual death territory. You know, it is. I mean, the language that I've been using for myself recently is inviting ruin. You know, willingly or unwillingly, but inviting ruin. And especially over these last months, when listening to disappointment or even some fear, a lot of those conversations have been focused on what might be wrong in the order or difficult in the order, or even what might be difficult with our teacher. And I'm aware in those conversations that it is not appropriate for me to kind of breezily come in with how much I love said order or said teacher. I have to actually just, it's not appropriate, you know, at that time. And what I've been noticing just these last few weeks is that, sort of like focusing for quite a few months on what's difficult, I realized that my natural temperament is quite celebratory. And I've had to sort of leave that out, you know, out of some of those conversations. So I feel there is something, I hope it's not too premature for me today to actually sort of try and say a few of the things that inspire me as well. I think this might be just a very complicated way of telling you I'm tired. You know, just a kind of introduction. And also, no, important point though, I want to say that it's not that I want to stop engaging in that way. in a way, it's work that goes on. I mean, perhaps it's had a particular or a peculiar intensity, you know, these last months, and perhaps the focus of that intensity has been our own order and our own teacher at times. But that work is actually the work of the Dharma life. But it's just, I think, in my own sort of mythos or something, I need to remember that actually, you know, this mind, remember what my natural temperament is. Something like that. In fact, even now, standing here, I'm very aware it's actually impossible for me to honour the kind of range of views that I've been listening to, yeah, over the last 6-8 months in particular. I can't actually do it. I think all I can offer, I just want to speak quite personally. So, in fact, you know, just like looking, where do we go from here, or even where do I go from here? I'm just going to speak quite personally. I think, in fact, the first thing I want to say, when my mind does that and I start to think, well, order convener, you know, what next? How do I make sure that I am honouring that, you know, my own faith and inspiration, you know, as well as still carrying on with that kind of care and sensitivity over the conversations that are still carrying on. I think what I would like to offer, some of you will know I've got a very strong kind of nomadic myth, if you like, in my life. So I'd just like to say here, especially as international order convener, a lot of my time and energy, you know, is travelling, and I visit a lot of order members around the world. It's a real privilege and a joy to do that. But I haven't actually engaged that much with the order here in the UK and Ireland. So I'd like to spend some time next year, if that's possible, some significant time, just going about the order in the UK and Ireland. And I'd like to do that on foot. I'd like to do it along the ancient tracks. It's something Loka Bandhu did some years ago, and I've done a little bit of it myself. It feels unfinished business to me. So anyway, that's maybe a bit further in the future. But I'd also just like to share a few thoughts about where I think we might go as an order. It's a bit of a provocative title I came up with: As We Grow, Minimise the Rules. So I'd just like to say a bit about that. It actually comes from a founder of a company, quite a big company now in North America. And he gave a presentation. I just happened to be looking at it. It was a series of slides about 2 years ago. And one of them was simply this: as we grow, minimize the rules. So obviously that's a business. And as a Buddhist community, we don't have to take our cue from business organizations. But it's also an organization. You know, it's also a community, if you like. And I just thought that was quite interesting that he was making that point. And I think what he had in mind was, how, as you grow, the danger is that you end up inhibiting creativity and innovation. And I thought, yeah, that's actually a value that's important for me in our order. Now, I mean, Parami very generously said that, you know, I'm a deep thinker. Actually, my thinking isn't that rigorous. So when I say this, it's not a philosophically worked out statement that I'm trying to present to you. Yeah, as we grow, minimize the rules. It's more like I'm a very strong, I run on very strong feeling and intuition. So the last couple of years, I've just been carrying that almost around in the back of my mind as just all like a slogan, if you like. So when I'm engaged in some order business, I'm just trying to think, well, yes, we do need some, I don't know whether rules is the right word, I'm not going to unpack that word, but we do need something, we do need a context, we do need a framework. You know, discipline is important, but can we make sure that we don't overdo that? So it's more like that I'm kind of meaning this. Also, I feel okay saying this. I want to sort of back myself, as it were. When I was appointed as order convener, it was very much a next generation appointment. So, you know, I feel okay. Thanks. You know, I'll have a go. This is what it looks like. You know, this is what it looks like. This is how I'm thinking. And one of the things that strongly attracted me to the order was the idea of a community made up of true individuals. When I came across that idea, a true individual, someone who has a strong ethical foundation, who's prepared to kind of stand up for what they believe, but also someone who's willing to cooperate together with other people for a greater good. And I think the way that Sangharakshita established the order took some inspiration from Nietzsche, who described the purpose of a society is to produce outstanding individuals. So to my mind, if I take that as my starting point, it has significant implications for how we organise ourselves and how we talk to each other. So when I think, what does it look like? I think my mind just went in three directions. So I'm just going to, they're all quite simple in a way, but I'll just say something about each of those three. The first one is the importance of freedom of speech and debate. I know that's a very obvious point, but I really just want to make it the importance of freedom of speech and debate. It's not an easy thing to do, you know, to actually really listen to each other, but we're in the order together, and that's, I feel, that's the first thing we can offer each other. I think when I think of this, I feel like I'm finding out what trusting each other's going for refuge means. Yeah, I think it's in this area. It's about being able to have really engaged conversations and trusting the basis for that, even if you end up disagreeing. So it's a bit like, I don't know quite how to put this, but I can sort of glimpse that this might be the archetype for what it means to be an order convener. Yeah, is that basically we trust each other's going for refuge. And on that basis, we engage with each other. That doesn't mean agreeing with each other unnecessarily. And it isn't just about empathy either, although that's a very important quality. It's about creating and exemplifying a kind of atmosphere of trust. So, to my mind, this is a bit of an observation, but I do feel, when I've been reflecting on this over these last months, that our kind of culture, if you like, has at times been too defensive. Yeah? I won't unpack what defensive means. I'll just use that as a word. And I feel that one of the things that we've been doing is having another go at just trying not to be so defensive, if you like, trying to open something up. And also, I've been telling people this quite regularly, that when you open something up, you can't actually control how that happens. Yeah, so it can look a bit messy, a bit chaotic, a bit confusing, but actually I think it needs to happen. So it doesn't actually worry me too much, you know, that it does look a little bit uncertain. I mean, there were times it just felt we collectively threw the order up in the air. At the same time, though, I also want to say, you know, when I just reflecting on my own experience and talking to people who I've known a long time in the order, I could kind of see, it's not a justification for defensiveness, but I could sort of see why it might arise. You know, because some people tell me that when they found the order, it literally saved their life. Yeah, it quite literally saved their life. So when something has had that much of an impact on you, you can understand why you cherish it so tightly or so deeply and why you might be a bit defensive if it's challenged. So I think it's important to understand that as well. The second point is actually just kind of taking the first point a bit further about trust, which is creating that atmosphere of trust. Now, I'm well aware that difficult conversations, they go much better when you've got a platform of trust, yeah? It's just a really obvious point, but actually, it's so important that that's how you can establish the base. It's like I'm really aware of how savvy we all are about the assumptions other people are making about us, yeah? I'm really aware of that. It's just almost something that seems like human beings do really well. I've noticed this even with people who are very mentally ill. They can still recognize the assumptions you're making about them. And it's just something that human beings, we seem to be able to pick this up very quickly and easily. So I think it's really important that the assumptions we make about each other are good. Yeah, because if you're walking towards someone and they feel that you're not trusting them, the conversation that then ensues is likely not to go very well. So if you need to have, you know, a significant conversation with someone, do all you can to actually feel that you can feel some trust towards that person. I also think this has some implications for all of our institutions, including the college. I think that handing on to a next generation gives a strong endorsement, not only to the individuals that you hand on to, but also to the very sort of culture and training that's created them. Yeah? And I think that I'll put this the other way around as well, because I think not handing on gives the opposite message, that you don't trust the very culture that you've, or we've created together. And I just want to say as well, working with Ratnadarani and Sadaloka in particular, I think they are thinking through some quite exciting proposals for how to reform the college. It's a bit early for them to say those to us yet. There needs to be a bit of courtesy that they need to take that to the rest of the college. But I'm very supportive and encouraging of that. I think it's looking really exciting. So the third point, or the third kind of trend, if you like, of thought that I had, was to focus commonality on principle more than on practice, at least for order members. This might be a bit of a contentious point, but I'll try and say what I mean. I'll start just a couple of short quotes. Though the doctrine is the same for all, the method may be applied in a manner peculiar to each. Though the doctrine is the same for all, the method may be applied in a manner peculiar to each. That's Bhante in A Survey of Buddhism. And Damarati family, a very nice quote from, he says it's from the Mennonite church, Christian church. Unity in principle, freedom in action. So I think what I'm trying to say here is that I really do value commonality of practices in the order and what we present in our community. But I also want to absolutely make sure that there's room for freedom of exploration and creativity for order members. I don't want that to be inhibited. You know, I think there's a great value in that. What I feel is important is that it does place a responsibility on each of us that when something is taking off in our own practice, that when we want to share that with other people, it's important that we use our common language and we use our common shared frameworks as much as possible. Yeah, I think that's the responsibility if we want this kind of freedom of exploration. Just to say as well, sorry, I'll just have a quick sip of water. When I say minimise rules, I don't think this precludes an order constitution. It's something that's been in the air for a while. We haven't actually got one as an order. I think it would be good that we did have some kind of document. My sort of preference would be that it's an inspirational document and it's relatively short. That's not actually an implied judgment about anything at all. I mean, I just say as a personal temperamental preference, an inspirational document and relatively short. And actually, a lot of how the order operates and works, although some of it's a bit informal, it's actually a lot of it is out there already. But I think it would be good. I do think that's good. So I just want to say that because it might be implying that I'm sort of anti-documents or something, and I don't mean that at all. Just want to make one more point. Although I'm really talking about the order, I do get to visit a lot of centres in my work as well. And I mean, it's bodhisattva work, just a week after week to present the Dharma and meditation and so on to people. Sometimes, though, what I do to detect, if I don't know what to call it, a bit of untapped energy or creativity. All I can say is that sometimes when I go to a centre, I just want to say to the team, yep, go for it. Actually, trust your training, trust your inspiration, you know, trust the system we've got, and actually just go for it. You know, as though, I don't know why, it just feels a bit sort of tight sometimes, or that you're not quite sure where the sort of expressive bit can come in, and how much we have to be kind of quite clear that we are getting it right, so that we are honouring what we've been given. But I think I want to say to people, and some of the one or two of the things that Dharma Mega talked about in the Sikha project, I think are probably examples of that, where people have taken our kind of core values and core teachings and just given them a bit of expression, you know, and they're valuable to lots of other people. And I think the real commonality for me, especially as an order, it's coming together like this, and it's coming together in chapters and other equivalents, if you like. I loved what Amarguita said yesterday about coming together. I mean, that was in pairs. I'm talking about maybe just like groups and, you know, gatherings of order members. But you come together and have those intentional conversations. You know, it's a very nice phrase I think she used. So far, I mean, I've talked a lot about communication and conversation. I just wanted to drop in a little anecdotal story. You know, that actually building an atmosphere of trust and communication, you know, it doesn't just happen through talking. I mean, we know that, don't we, as a community? But I just wanted to say that almost. It doesn't just happen through talking. You know, all the kind of whole range of things we do, it happens in silence, in ritual and so on. But I just wanted to, I don't know why it came to my mind, but when I was thinking this, I was remembering, it's a bit of an anecdote here, anecdote alert. My mind went back like 25 years, and I remember starting a job in a warehouse packing sugar into containers. I started off, it was a group of guys I was working with. It was piece rate, which means you get paid for how many packs of sugar you put into a 40-ton container. I was working with these two guys, and I think by lunchtime we'd picked up 6,000 15-kilogram packs of sugar and put them on a conveyor belt and put them in the back of a lorry. It was only at lunchtime that they asked me what my name was. And at the end of the day, we didn't talk much in the afternoon either, but we got to the end of the day, and one of the two guys, he said to me, "See you tomorrow." But you see, the thing is, that "see you tomorrow" was really significant. That was him actually saying, "Thanks for coming today. We really appreciated your work. We weren't sure about you when you started. But actually, we want to carry on working with you. Hope you have a good evening. See you in the morning." And I knew that. And I knew that he didn't have to say it. And I thought, that's all right. That's completely all right. It's complete. He looked me in the eye. That's the first time he'd done that today. And he said, "See you tomorrow." And I thought, yeah, we need to. I don't know what the point is there. Maybe it might be actually just like working with blokes. I mean, it's just like to say that men don't always. Sometimes you can work with men, and it can feel, for a woman, it can feel quite cool and alienating, I think. But, you know, sometimes men are a bit like that. So I don't mean that they should be and so on, but there's just, you know, there you go. Just one more point, actually, about difficult conversations. How to say this? Well, I'm aware over these last months that I do see, in a way, when they go well, you can still arrive at a point where there are some quite significant differences in view. You know, the thing for me is, I want the conversation to go well. You know, I want it to be established on a basis of trust. I want you to really have a go. In fact, Vishwapani gave an example, didn't he, on Friday, those of us that were there. He'd have been having this online dialogue. That's the sort of thing where you really take a lot of care. There's mutual trust. But sometimes you end up, you are in a bit of a different place. And so I just want to say that if that place means we can't all stay together as one order, that does not scare me. I'm not hoping for that. I'm not expecting it. I'm not saying it should happen. But I'm just saying, I'm not afraid of that. In fact, how I would put this is that if it looked like that was the case at any time while I'm order convener, I'm up for putting in the hours for trying to make, if there was a split, for it to happen as well and with as much integrity, as much mutual goodwill and continuing connection as possible. Yeah? So I'm not afraid of that. Yeah? Maybe I can just leave that point there. Yeah? So I'd just like to finish. How are we doing? Not too bad. I'd like to say something about what I do think we offer as an order to the world. I think this same witnessing that I talked about, that we can do really well as order members between each other, I think it's also what we offer the world as well. One of the simplest expressions for this that I came across was last week in a community meeting here, lovely Sangadeva, just over there. He said we introduce people to an enlightening process. Yeah, that's what we do. We introduce people to an enlightening process. He said it's the moment when you, as of the person who's being introduced to the teachings, you have started to apply them and you begin to see some change. Yeah? He said you start to see significant changes in yourself and a sense that a completely new kind of freedom is possible to you. And he said that's what we can offer. He said, I'm quoting you quite a lot here, Sangadeva. He said, watching this is one of the most thrilling moments of your life, didn't you? And, it was moving to hear that. I know what he means. It was really moving to hear that. He said, it's their experience, but you can witness it. Yeah, and you've helped them to reach it by sharing the very same things that have helped you and your own experience of putting them into practice. And his thrill is, you know, that is one of the things that we offer as well. It's not just the teachings. It's like that affirming witness to the changes somebody is making in their life and the freedom it brings when you start to let go of habits that have been weighing you down and your vision of what life can be opens up. And you're there with them. You know, you're there with them. And they slowly learn what it is and they grow in confidence. And I mean, this is surely what we call Kalyanamitrata. Yeah, this is what Kalyanamitrata is. It's an enlightening process. It's activated, learned, and matured through our culture of friendship. So I was reflecting on what were the significant moments for me, you know, in that period, as it were, going right back. And I thought, yeah, it was other people. No doubt about that. It was other people. It was also, though, I just kind of stayed with that reflection for a while, and I realised it was also, there were some key ideas, and I just wanted to finish with those as well. I mentioned the true individual. You know, that was one thing for me. It was so important when I came across that as just a vision of, you know, what a human could be, and you could do it with other people. Another one was when I came across the Bodhisattva as the unification and resolution of all contradictions. I mean, that to me, I mean, contradiction has been a theme through my whole adult life, you know, pre getting involved in Buddhism. I realized that I was shot through with contradiction. Yeah, I realized that my work, I was working in conflict resolution. I realized great work, but it was also shot through with contradiction. The world was shot through with contradiction. And here I came across an idea where there was some kind of synthesis that you could aim for. It was achievable, not easy, but it was achievable. Also, when I came across the description of the path as vision and transformation, you know, that's the Noble Eightfold Path series, lecture series. That was the first one I listened to. That was so exciting to me to have a path laid out in this way, vision, transformation. And then there's this kind of feedback loop between them, a kind of spiral, you know, as Bhante calls it. The other one was coming across, this was a little bit later, a few years later, but coming across the religion of art, this conscious surrender to the beautiful. So that whole side of life, that culture of life, it wasn't even that you could just bring it into your Dharma life. You could actually, it could be your Dharma life as well. That whole area. You know, I'd never known how to sort of, I don't know, deal with that, if you like, how to have that as your part of your existential life. So although I call those ideas, even thrilling ideas, actually, they were more than that. They were game-changing paradigms. Yeah, that's no, really, they were. They were game-changing paradigms for how I could see my life. And I feel, I mean, those, there's several others, but those in particular, I've been running on them ever since. I've been running on them with other people. And also I want to say, seeing some fruits. You know, I do feel that. I mean, I love the way Karen Agita talked about our practice having leading edges and training edges yesterday. And I thought, yeah, I like that way of thinking about it. You know, some of my mental states are pathetically mundane. Yeah? But some of them are not. Some of them, actually, there is, I mean, my own language, right, for myself, is that I do see a kind of resolving process. You know, because contradiction has been such the kind of matrix which drives my mythic life, you know, I do see a resolving going on. Some of the things that I used to find unbearable, some of the tensions in my life, they're just not there anymore. You know, who knows that sometimes they come back or flare up or whatever, but there is some kind of resolving process that's been going on in me. What I would say is, and I really mean this, I cannot imagine doing anything more worthwhile with the last 20 years of my life, which is basically the time I've been in Tri Ratna, FWBL as it was. So I recognise the value of the teachings I've been given, and I recognise the value of the community that surrounds them. Yeah, that's you. Yeah, thank you.